It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Tuesday, January 7th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Sitka's Pacific High School students return from winter break today to find one last holiday gift, a new school. For the past 2 years, Pacific High has been housed in the Southeast Alaska Career Center, while the Lincoln Street building was remodeled from the ground up. KCAW's Emily Foreman visited the all-new Pacific High the day before students arrived and learned how this state-of-the-art facility has been over a century in the making.
It's the first full week of the new year. Resolutions are fresh, and we're still optimistic that they'll stick. It's a time focused on new beginnings, and Sitka's Pacific High School is honoring that sentiment in a big way with a brand new building.
So here I am. This is the new building.
New building. I know. It looks great, doesn't it? Hard to see on the radio.
Describe it.
Looking from the office, you get this great rotunda, which has this light from the sky coming down in this like scoop. So we have this great space where everybody can meet and gather. That's my favorite spot.
If it sounds quiet for 11:30 a.m. on a Monday, that's because the students are still on break. When I ask Phil Burdick, co-principal of Pacific High, about how the renovation came to fruition, he starts from the beginning, the very beginning, all the way back to the late 1800s.
Education was segregated for a long time in Sitka, and this place that we sit now was a part of that history. This site has gone through many, many incarnations.
Tracking the history is a little murky, but the point is that for well over 100 years, the Lincoln Street site has been dedicated to education. And today's version is worlds away from the original, a one-room, segregated Native training school. Burdick is confident that the current iteration is the best.
So are there ways in which the curriculum will be able to be expanded because of the space?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you look around, every classroom has a door to the outside, which ties into our model that, you know, learning happens out in the community. It doesn't have to happen in the school. So everyone has an opportunity to get out. Everyone has an opportunity to find a quiet space. Everyone has an opportunity to learn in the way in which suits them best.
This building is all about options. For instance, Burdick loves the flex room, a room flanked on either side by large glass doors that lead to two additional classrooms. The doors slide open, transforming what was three separate rooms into a large open space.
My name is Mandy Summer, and I teach English and health.
Summer says that the space is a huge luxury. It's roomy compared to the career center where teachers had to share classrooms. Once Summer started listing the new perks, it was hard to stop.
It's nice to have sinks in our room. I mean, just, you know, I mean, the little things, you know, that you don't really realize. And it's just new, you know. I mean, I have only worked here with the ceiling dripping on me and, you know, moldy tiles above my head. And, you know, I mean, that's the only Pacific High I've ever known. So this is really nice.
Hillary Seelan teaches English, history, and government, and really appreciates her large windows overlooking Crescent Harbor.
And, you know, the windows are really lovely. I love all the light in here. I love the color palette in here. I like all the storage.
Look at your view. Like,
how
many teachers have this kind of view?
No one.
Rest assured that the Pacific High crew is feeling pretty grateful and optimistic about 2014.
So there's you know, there's a lot of history of education on this site, and we're just sort of the latest and hopefully greatest iteration of what has gone on here.
In Sitka, I'm Emily Foreman. Scientists have been saying for years that more carbon dioxide in the oceans is hurting sea life. But a new study says the impact goes beyond the physical. It says ocean acidification is changing behavior in fish. As KUCB's Annie Ropeek explains, that could be a problem throughout the ecosystem, including for fisheries in Alaska.
Researchers know that ocean acidification can be harmful. The change is caused by an increase in carbon dioxide in ocean water. More CO2 means a more acidic habitat. It can wear away crab shells and fish scales, and it makes it harder for them to grow back. But what about how acidification is making those species feel? Martine Triscaris is a marine biologist based out of the Scripps Institute of Oceanography in California. In a recent study, his team set out to look at what goes on in the brains of juvenile rockfish when they live in acidified waters. He says rockfish have predictable behaviors, so it's easier to see changes happening in what they do.
The normal fish, they're used to moving between the shaded and light parts of the kelp forest, for example, looking for food or interacting with other fish.
They wanted to see whether acidification would make the fish behave differently. To find out, they looked at certain neurons in the fish's brains. Those neurons are known to change what they do when the fish has a high blood acid level. In a previous study on Australian clownfish, the change affected sense of smell. Triscaris says this study was looking at the same neurological process. For their experiment, they took a rockfish that lived in acidified waters and put it in a tank with two different colored walls, one light and one dark. He says the acidified fish wanted to stay by the dark wall, and so did a fish that had been dosed with an anxiety-inducing drug.
Ocean acidification affects their neurons in a way that maybe they feel more threatened and they prefer to stay more sheltered.
It might not sound too significant, but it points to something bigger. Acidification was making the fish do the opposite of what they'd normally do.
Depending on the species, if they normally go offshore at a certain period of time or they might go to a specific area to spawn and reproduce, it might affect the way they interact with other fish. So the potential implications are pretty big.
Triscaris' co-author on the study is Trevor Hamilton, a neuroscientist based out of McEwen University in Edmonton, Canada. He says the changes they saw would be really long-term in the wild. They looked at the kind of acidification that takes place over 100 years. But he says any species of fish in acidified waters is vulnerable to these same effects. Eventually, it could shake up the entire ecosystem.
What could end up happening is the fish will spend less time leaving their safe environment, so there is potential for them to get caught by less nets, essentially, and get eaten by less predators. So it could have an effect all the way up the food chain, as well as for general fishing for humans.
And that's a problem in the Bering Sea. Here and in other places with colder waters, more carbon dioxide gets absorbed into the ocean faster. That means these long-term changes might happen sooner.
So in Alaska, you may see this effect happening a bit sooner, and it may be more pronounced. And that would actually be a really, really interesting question to study, to lower the water temperature and see what the effect would be.
That's part of their next phase of research. Hamilton and Triscaris hope to do more field work after this, and they want to look at how fish might adapt to the effects of acidification, because that could mean behavioral changes too. They call it a domino effect. Hamilton says while this isn't something that'll wipe out any species overnight, it's important for fishermen and regulators to be aware of.
If this mechanism does actually occur in the future, we will see fish that are more likely to stay closer to their home environment and explore different situations a lot less. We don't know if it will happen, but it's something we should definitely be concerned about.
Hamilton says they picked rockfish for their first study in part because the species is harvested commercially. He says if ocean acidification continues at its current rate, fishermen may see fish acting differently than they're used to, and they may see fewer fish where they usually expect to find them. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
A newly refurbished Coast Guard icebreaker is en route to Antarctica to free two vessels stuck in ice, a Russian research vessel and a Chinese icebreaker. The Russian ship has been stranded since before Christmas. The Chinese vessel got stuck when it tried to help. Allison Conroy, the Coast Guard Chief Warrant Officer for the Pacific area, says the Coast Guard cutter Polar Star is being sent to the scene. The heavy-duty icebreaker just finished undergoing a three-year, $90 million overhaul. The Polar Star set out from Sydney on Saturday. Conroy says the Chinese ship's helicopter has evacuated the passengers from the Russian ship, but the vessel's crews are still on board.
The Polar Star is heading down there about 8 knots right now, and we expect them to be on scene on January 12th. Once on scene, they plan to break the ice out around the two ships once they break a navigational path through the sea ice. And that way, the two ships that are beset will then be able to leave the area under their own power.
Conroy says Coast Guard ships are often tasked with breaking ice to keep navigational lanes clear. The Coast Guard cutter Healy performed one such mission in Alaska in 2010 when it helped a Russian vessel break a channel through sea ice to resupply Nome. But Conroy says it's more rare for an icebreaker to have to rescue other ships, like the Polar Star is setting out to do.
The search and rescue mission that it's embarking on now is actually kind of unique. The last time we probably heard about ships being beset in ice, you can read in your history books.
This is the first time the Polar Star has been to Antarctica since 2006. After this, it will embark on its main mission, breaking ice to help resupply the U.S. Antarctic Program's field stations. And Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell has rejected a proposed initiative that sought to ban commercial shore gill nets and set nets in non-subsistence areas. Supporters of the proposal bill billed it as a conservation effort, but critics like the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association called it a fish grab by opposing interests. The Department of Law in its review said the proposal, while written to apply statewide, is instead targeted toward the set net commercial salmon fishery in Cook Inlet. The review found the proposal would, quote, effectively eliminate a major user group while appealing to the self-interests of sport and personal fisheries, end quote. The review also found that it would affect the ability of the Board of Fisheries and the legislature to make allocation decisions among competing users. Treadwell's rejection can be appealed. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's just about 8 a.m. You're tuned in to KCAW Sitka, where it's 43 degrees and raining. Rain is in the forecast today. However, it should diminish in the afternoon. Temperatures should hold steady around 43 degrees. Southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour in the morning, becoming light and variable. And rain is likely tonight with lows around 40 and east winds increasing to 10 miles per hour late. Rain is in the forecast tomorrow as well, with highs around 42. Stay tuned for National Public Radio. Also coming up at 8:18, I'll speak with Shannon Hoagland of the Sitka Film Society about the Inequality for All documentary, which is playing this Friday in Sitka. That's a live interview at 8:18. Let's take a look at the community calendar, which is available on KCAW's website, kcaw.org. Blatchley Middle School invites the public to review samples of math materials that may be adopted for instructional use. They are available at the office during regular school hours. Community Schools is holding a core exercise class today from 5:15 to 6 p.m. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio. Have a good morning.